Hello, this is Daryl here, sending love as always. Thank you for tuning in. I just want to say, if you like this interview, you can check our website for companion workbooks, action guides, tools, checklists, templates, and show notes with links for everything mentioned on the call. Just visit bestbusinesscoach.ca. That's best, B-E-S-T, businesscoach.ca. Enjoy.
Hi, I'm Daryl Urbanski, and welcome to the Best Business Podcast. My mission is to help create 200 new multimillionaire business owners. How? You'll do better when you know better. In my interviews, you'll hear from self-made millionaires, seven-figure business owners, authors, and world-class experts sharing how they did it so you can too, without experiencing the same obstacles they did. Now, if you like this interview, please share it with a friend you think will benefit. They'll appreciate it, and I will as well. You can also connect with me on social media. Look for Daryl Urbanski, D-A-R-Y-L, Urban Ski, U-R-B-A-N-S-K-I, and add me so we can be friends. Now sit back, relax, and enjoy what I've prepared for you right here, right now. Right now, I'd like to share with you three things which I believe will help improve your life, save you money, plus make your business and income grow fast. The first is to call 1-888-844-4769 or 1-888-844-GROW. Introduce yourself and tell me how I can help or how far you've come from where you were when you started. Your story can inspire others plus motivate those who are in now or have come from a similar situation. Second is let me suggest the best of the best options available for your current business. I speak to a lot of people, and I can connect you to the expert, resource, or tool which will get you the growth you want in your business now if you will just take a second to tell me about yourself. Visit bestbusinesscoach.ca/help. I'll diagnose the exact thing you need to get you from where you are now to where you want to be in your life and business. Once again, just go to bestbusinesscoach.ca/help, and with a couple clicks, you'll see what I'd suggest you do if you sat down in front of me and helped me understand your current mental, physical, financial situation, plus the stage and status of your current business now. So once again, go to bestbusinesscoach.ca/help, click on what best describes you, and only get the best you deserve. Your time is important, so help me get you the right tool, introduction, strategy, tactic, or tidbit of information you need for better revenues and save your time by needing less effort. Work smarter, not harder. I'm suggesting you help me help you work on your business instead of in it. Third, check out morefreemoney.com to plug a money-sucking black hole and save your business from disaster before it's too late. See, most entrepreneurs don't give their credit card processing accounts a second thought, but that's a big mistake costing you thousands and even tens of thousands of dollars each year. Money you deserve because you're the one who's done all the hard work you do to make the sale. The merchant industry is so bloated with fees, shaving 0.5% or even a full percent can be worth a fortune to your bottom line. All you're doing is keeping more of the money you're already making. The other risk is having the wrong merchant account puts your entire business at risk if and when you hit a sudden growth spurt. Your merchant can decide to keep the money for 8 months plus and shut down your ability to charge credit cards or even switch to a different merchant. Don't wait until it's too late. It takes 5 minutes and it's 100% free to find out how much you can save and make sure the merchant you have right now is the right one for your type of business. Be strategic. Set yourself up for safe, long-term growth. Visit morefreemoney.com to see how much more money you could be keeping from sales you already make. Stop your merchant from stealing from you after you close a sale and collect payment. Visit morefreemoney.com now. Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us. My name is Daryl Urbanski, your host as always. And today we are joined by my good friend and two-time guest, Micah Mitchell. But today we've got something a little bit different for you. And I interviewed Micah for the second time for our show. And at the end of the interview, he said, Daryl, I've got an idea for you. And I really like the idea. So, Micah, why don't you share with us what your idea is for the listeners today?
Yeah, so I figured we'd turn the tables on Daryl here, and I would interview him, and so we could dig into his brain. And it was at my request, you know, so he's not conceited enough to ask to be interviewed on his own show. But I just, you know, he's such a smart guy. I just wanted to kind of dig in and see what we find.
That's awesome. Yeah, I love the idea. It's a great idea. It's definitely something I wouldn't have thought of on my own. So,
All right. Yeah. Well, what do we got? How's this work?
All right. So, yeah, I'll just dive right in. I've got a bunch of questions. They're going to be from all different angles, so it'll be a bit spontaneous. So start with an easy, maybe hard question. Sometimes hard for me to answer, but how when somebody comes up to you and they ask, what do you do, especially if it's somebody who's not in your market, you know, maybe your grandma or something, when they ask you, what do? How do you answer that?
Oh, that's a great one. So I always say I help businesses with websites generate leads and sales. And then I shut up. And I got this from James Hickey. He's a guy out of San Diego. And it's funny, I met him online. I think it was a Warrior Forum or something. And I was asking the same thing. I was like, what do I do? And he gave me that little elevator pitch. And it just fits perfectly for, you know, I've done a few different things, always kind of under the same umbrella, but that has always worked every time. I help businesses with websites generate leads and sales. And then you shut up and you wait for them to ask the next question.
Gotcha. Okay. And why do you do it? Why is it important to you?
Why is what I do important to me?
Yeah.
That's a great question. I'm so glad you asked that. I like it. So here's, it is, because here's what it comes to in a nutshell. So I think in the beginning, like, you know, I've had a lot of different businesses and I've failed a lot of times and, you know, just, I've had successes too, obviously, $1 million campaigns and all that, but you know, I think in the beginning, it's just about trying to survive. And then once you survive, it's about trying to earn, like, I want to make a lot of money. And then when you start making money, I mean, I'm not necessarily balling, and some people listening to this might be making more money than me. Who knows? But, you know, once you just start having more than you want to spend in a month without feeling frivolous, suddenly your needs and wants change. And so right now, what I do and why I love it is because it's really come to where I just want to help other people. You know, I don't want to get too deep. We did another call with a guy who dug deep. Like, I was adopted when I was young. And so for me, fitting in has always been a survival thing. And so helping others has always been, and I've always been a bit of a people pleaser that way too. It's always been something that's been a value add to my life. So I love what I do because it's about helping people. And the average business needs a couple hundred to a couple thousand customers to stay afloat, right? And so, like, when I have my martial arts school, I've got a couple hundred students, I'm affecting all these people and their families, and it was always amazing to me when people come in and, like, the benefits that the people around them would get just from them getting some sort of benefit, from being more active, from having more discipline in their lives, from just seeing that they can accomplish something, or having more confidence, or even just networking and making new friends. So I really like that idea of helping other people. And then why I like doing what I do now is where I help other business owners is it's fun for me. So I've got my own products and I've got my own courses, and that's great. But what I also really enjoy is I love being able to step in and out of businesses to help people, because if I'm helping business owners and every business needs a couple hundred to a couple thousand people, then I just feel like I have a higher level impact and more influence on helping make this world a better place. And just, it even just started because, again, I've had a number of different businesses, but where my story really starts to change, you know, my quote unquote, like, success or ascension started was with the martial arts school. And that's how you and I know each other, because you were one of my coaches, one of my mentors when I had that. And I was giving a lot of my friends advice at the time, and they were having success in their businesses. And I got bored with my martial arts school, and I did a launch to take a bunch of people to Japan for this 30-day trip to go to Japan. I'd live there for 3 years and do all my favorite things. And right before I left, like 2 days before I got on the plane, a buddy of mine called and said, "Daryl, I just got promoted to being CEO of my company." And it's called Ottawa Kiosk. It's up in Ottawa. Now that they changed to Canadian Kiosk, but it was business directory. They had a business directory and they had online ads and they did contests and help businesses promote. And they did a lot of, like, local news stuff. And he had just been running their satellite office in Kingston. You know, he was, not to put him down anyway, but he was in some ways a glorified sales rep where he had his own office in his own city. But he just kind of got sick of the office politics and came to Kingston and just started signing up businesses here. But because of the things that we were talking about and the things I got him thinking about with the company, and it was, we both learned together, But I was learning from you. I was getting coaching from you. I was basically spending almost all my income on learning books, coaching. Anytime I heard a book in an audio program or a seminar or whatever, I bought it. Like whether I had time to read or not, I just got it because I knew the book I don't own, I can't read, and the book I don't read can't help me. So I was just really focused. And that was really impactful because I know a story in his life, and just to have seen that where now he's the CEO of a, you know, $1.5 million company in Ottawa, and I had another friend with a flower shop. And she was really nervous and scared. And just the confidence that she would have when I would tell her to do something and she would do it and she'd get results. Like just the glow on her face. I had another buddy that was a mechanic. He had a garage. And it was just being able to help these people. It was just really amazing for me. And then I remember I was staying in my buddy's garage and I saw like 7 or 8 people come and go. And that's when I realized that by helping business owners, I'm actually affecting all the people underneath them that their business serves. And so that's when I really decided that I wanted to go into helping businesses grow.
Oh, interesting. Cool. So as you're doing that, helping websites get leads, what are some of the common lies or myths or misconceptions that they have about that?
Well, that's great. I love how you bring that. Everyone wants to sell the easy push button part of it. And, you know, in a lot of ways, you can say that, like, you know, but the lies is that it's still the same trade. What I mean by that is you might have better power tools, but carpentry is still carpentry. You know, you might have better saws and you might have a pneumatic drill or, an air compressor and a nail gun so you can nail faster and all this sort of stuff. But at the end of the day, you're still doing carpentry. So when you say the lies in that is when they make it seem like an idiot can do it. And that's a disrespect to the people who are good at it. And it's a disrespect to the people who are coming into it. The reality is like, you know, sales and marketing have always been sales and marketing. And I think they follow the same principles, whether it's online, whether it's on television or in print, it follows the same principles and strategies, and the tactics might be different. And the timelines for certain things might be different, but it's still the same thing. So a big lie, I think, is when they're like, you know, I mean, anyone can learn it, but when they just make it seem like it's stupid easy, I think that it can be misleading to that. And it's catch-22, because on one hand, you could say, well, it gets more people to at least try it. I just think it needs to set people's expectations properly. And so that's a big lie, I think, when it comes to, you know, making money online easy. But otherwise, I mean, it's huge, because in the olden days, if I put an ad in a newspaper, I would just get whatever results I would get. And I would have to wait 6 weeks, 8 weeks sometimes before I really knew how well it performed. Right now, I can make what would be called a banner ad, which is kind of just a newspaper ad, right? And I can put it on the internet and I can get results that day. Like, right away, if I'm willing to spend the money, and I can do, in fact, my team's doing this right now. We made 4 different types of banners. I'm going to throw them up as ads. We're going to see which one works the most, and guess which one we're going to put on my website, give it a permanent home on my website. The one that works best. And that is easy. That's way easier, and that's like lightning fast, and that makes me a much, much, much better marketer than I could have been in a strictly offline world, because I could take that ad, and if it had a phone number on it and we tracked that it worked the best, I could also then put that in newspapers, and it now makes my newspaper marketing better. So there's, you know, there's truth to it, but it just depends on how it's spun. I think the other, it's not necessarily a lie, but there's a lot of copying of a copying of a copying of tactics, and people not understanding the deeper reasons why you do things. Like, I got asked about button colors today, actually this morning. You know, one of the project managers, one of my clients' teams asked me about button colors. And I'm like, I really don't think the focus should be on the button color. I think the focus should be on testing 2 different pages, you know, and seeing which one works. The button color might be one thing you're going to test between the two, but like, I don't care. Don't ask me. Like, I don't know. Red, who cares? Like, that's just a really tactical thing. And the button color isn't going to change sales as much as what you're offering or how it's being presented, which might mean the layout of the page or might be the words of the page. So that's, again, some of the lies people get. And a lot of that is because, well, it's not as tangible with business. People aren't as transparent with their results. A lot of times people are presented as gurus when they may not have the results or the track record that they're being presented as having. And so that's kind of the other lie. It's not so much a lie, but it's something people have to be weary of, because it's really easy to go pay for pretty, you know, pretty website to be put together and pretty images, and have that also make you like ordained as a guru. You know, meanwhile, there might be some guy who's so busy in the trenches, he hasn't even worried about his own personal brand, doesn't have any of that set up. And then there's the flip side. There's guys that do have the results, they do have the knowledge and training, and then they did get the personal brand stuff taken care of. So that's just, it's not even so much lies, but it's kind of the precarious part where, and that's even part of how this whole podcast started, you know, because I'd done my first, for my client, I'd done a few jobs with clients where they, you know, $3,000 a month, $12,000 a month, which then for us was huge wins. But then I went and worked for John Assaraf and we were doing millions, you know, and I realized that the principles worked. It was just, there were more zeros on the end because there were more zeros. There was more zeros on the traffic being pushed. There was more, right? And a buddy of mine was like, Daryl, if I knew the people you knew and could have the conversations with them you have, I'd be doing multi-million-dollar campaigns. And I think back to like when I was, you know, getting coaching from you and some of the other courses and books and that like I went through a lot. Like I bought stuff, I torrented stuff, I went in on group buys. And just as a caveat, like when I torrented stuff, I didn't just steal it to seek to steal it. It was because I couldn't afford it or I didn't know where to get it. Otherwise, I would do a group buy, or I would buy it, or I'd go to the conference myself, or I'd share courses with people. And I was just an info junkie. I easily spent $70,000-$80,000 on seminars, mastermind, all that stuff. And not all things are created equal. And that's, again, part of why I started the podcast. I had enough clients at the time. I wasn't really looking for any new business. I put up there to maybe build an audience and to help people and to share with my friends and to give. I'm very fortunate to have, you know, people like you and other very savvy business owners on my personal Rolodex. So it was to put them out there and be like, hey, I don't know, you know, it's a tough world there, but hey, if you trust me, these are the people I'll introduce you to and you can trust them too. And that's why even at the beginning of every interview, I make a point to kind of tell people either very directly or indirectly what my relationship with them is, because 80-90% of the interviews I've done are people that I have, like you, come on twice. I have an existing relationship with. There have been people that have been introduced to me, and it's because, hey, we don't have anyone talking about that topic. You know, I did one with a guy, he's done ads on Instagram. We don't have anyone that's talked about doing ads on Instagram. So, okay, but I don't know him really well, so I have my team vet them as best I can. But as far as you go, like the lies, those are some of the big ones. That it's easy, you click a button, money flies out. It's the same marketing principles, you know, and it's not about scamming people. So you have to have real value to offer. You know, I actually had a tiff with a friend. This is a personal issue. I had a friend. I've known her since high school. I'm not going to give her too many details, but I've just known her for a long time. And you know, we talked about it, and she had some valid points, but I haven't really endorsed her or supported her and what she's been doing, because she wanted to be a business coach. She wanted to be a spiritual, like spirituality-led business coach, but I hadn't seen her run a successful business. I hadn't seen her run any kind of business. And I'm like, I don't know how you do that. And she paid to get this book done, and she had, I'm not going to say who, but I mean, she had all these, like Micah, if I said their names, you'd be like, what? Like all these big name, like four or five big names, like been on Oprah names, like have written chapters in her book and endorsed it with her and are celebrating her as a lead. And I'm like, I've known her since high school. I don't know of her owning a single business. I know of like a yoga studio that she got involved in Ottawa. I have no, like what other than that? So there's that, you know, she was a friend and wanted my endorsement and all that. And I just kind of avoided it. And then she was messaging me wanting to pick me, and I could tell she was trying to get free advice from me because she'd sold $25,000 in coaching consulting. And she wanted to ask me, hit me up for some free info to help those people. And that's kind of when I blew up on her over text, because I was like, I can't help you. Like, I don't know. And then she got mad because she did. She made a bunch of money. She has some family history. She inherited a bunch of money. So she's handled $1 million and this sort of stuff. But you know, that's another thing I think people have to worry about. Just because someone's a guru at blank doesn't make them a guru at the next thing. This is why something I encounter at my martial arts school. You know, I was a martial arts instructor. People come to me and ask me for relationship advice. And at the time, I just left a six-year relationship. And I'm like, I'm not the person to ask. Like, I'd like to think I know it. And of course, I have an opinion. But, you know, my relationship was 6 years and it didn't work out. I don't know what to tell you. You know, so just because someone's a guru at one thing, don't make them your guru for everything. You know, take the good from people and leave the bad and learn from the bad too. Jim Rohn says that. He said losers should give seminars. You know, hey, blank, hey, Joe Blow, you're 47 years old, you know, good looking guy like you. You lost your wife and kids. You're broke. Like, how did you mess up? Tell me your story. I will take diligent notes, right? But no one wants to pay them because they've got no results. So I don't know. Learn from the good and the bad. But those are the big ones, I think. Like, when you get into it, understand that it's a trade. And just like carpentry, you can build cabinets, but your first set of cabinets won't look as good as your third, fourth, fifth, 100th pair set. And that it's a trade, that it takes years to really master the craft. You can still get results along the way. And that not all teachers are created equal. And that it can be easy for people to hide their expertise. And that people buy their way into it. You know, the whole fake it till you make it. And, you know, all the power to people that do it and then do around help people. But I don't want to be someone's guinea pig. And people do it all the time. And even when I was a martial arts instructor, I think about when I was training other instructors, there's one guy, I burnt a bridge with him. So one thing that I've learned is if you're ever in a management or teaching role, you publicly praise people, you privately criticize them. And that was something I hadn't learned. And I had this guy who was one of the first couple of instructors I was trying to train. And I was so concerned with making sure my end students were getting quality teaching. I would correct him if he taught something I felt was wrong. And that was really bad because it's embarrassing to him. And then I'm leaving him in the room and he's supposed to be the credible authority. And everyone, you know, and everyone probably looking at him like, psh, you know, Daryl has to come in and correct you 4 times. And that was the onus on me. And I burnt that relationship with him. So at some point, you know, all of us are going to learn on other people. So that's, you just got to be careful for that. You know, everyone needs to learn and grow, but I feel bad. I've tried really hard to repair that relationship. And, I think things are okay, but you know, it's not like it ever was before. So that's not so much a myth or a lie, but I think those are some really common things that people don't, or they get eaten up by. So,
yeah, no, that, with the benefit of experience, you look at all of that together, and yeah, it's interesting to find the truth in it all. I'm going to switch gears on you a little bit, throw you a curveball. What do you want on your tombstone?
That's a great, great question. I want to know that my life made a difference. I want to know that I helped affect others' lives, that I add value to being here. I want to...
So what's it going to say?
He lived a long, happy, healthy, joyful, and wealthy life, making this world a better place for everyone else.
Okay, nice. Question for you. What do you feel really passionate about that most people disagree with you on?
That's an interesting one, that most people disagree with me on. Ooh. That's tough to say. I have very strong opinions that people disagree with me on. It might be like I have a really strong work ethic. It might be some people. That's a great question, Micah. I think it might. If it has to be anything, it might come down to work ethic, where I think I get accused of being very intense with things. You know, like when I set a goal of something, I go at it like it's life or death. It doesn't necessarily mean I do it better, but I throw so many hours at it that I eventually do get better. And if anything, that might be it. Like, you know, people might not be able to keep up with going to the gym as much as I might say they should, or study as much as I think they should, or work as many hours as I think they should. And that, if anything, but that's almost like the people around me, you know. That's part of where I really clung to those masterminds and those groups, because there I would find the individuals that matched my mindset. It was always in the high achieving group.
So in line with this, because I would agree, you're super disciplined. And when you talk about, you know, the martial arts studio and working out and all of that. So in line with that question, what do you feel you actually need the most discipline in? Like, where are you not disciplined?
Time management and focus. And so those are two big things. And that's a great lesson for everyone on the call. Time management and focus, because everyone has 24 hours at the beginning of the day. The only difference between you and the people who are where you want to be is they've used their time differently. So, you know, there's a saying when I was first getting into martial arts, I first started boxing. I was a kid, just got into boxing. I thought, because I was a big guy as a kid, I didn't like the idea of being a jock or a meathead because people already like tried to stereotype you as like big, slow, and dumb. And I just tried to distance myself from that. So I just wanted to see myself as very studious and smart and, excuse me. But when I started boxing, I loved one of the quotes on the wall was, when you're not training, someone else is to kick your ass. And that was a real motivator for me, that quote, when I was like, oh, I'm not going to go today. Because there's guys that you're a little competitive with, right? There's always people you try and keep up with. I think all of us have them. And so for me, that was a real driver. So time management is important because if you and your friend are going to start with the same goal in mind, and really at the end of 6 months, it's going to be who used their time better for blank. When you see someone win at the Olympic, this is another thing I learned training with world champions was, you know, when you see someone who's won a gold medal, it's not that they became world champion or the greatest at that. They already were. That's just the day everyone else found out. And what you found out is you found out that's the person who manages their time, their relationships, their life, the best to be the best at blank. You know, and that's really what it comes down to. So time management is huge. And then focus, because when I got big on my time management kick, it was like, hey, if I only got 30 minutes for this, then that's all I do. And whatever I get done is whatever I get done. So I started trying to manage my time that way, taking my day and organizing it. You know, like right now, I organize my day in 30-minute blocks. So I wake up, I try to set 3 priorities for the day. And then I take a look at what I have to do for the day, and I basically try to block my time into 30-minute blocks and take care of it. Eating is usually done on the go. I'm so grateful that I have people that help make sure I eat. So I do that, but then the other part is the focus, because even though I might do that, like, great, my day's planned in 30-minute blocks, I'm going to sit down and get this done. But you might sit down and be like, all right, for the next hour, I'm only going to do this. Hey, my phone, oh, wait, I want to answer this. Oh, wait, so-and-so is really important to me, and they're having a problem, and I need to give them 2 minutes of advice. Or, hey, I got a phone call from this potentially cool client. So you get pulled. So those are – I need more discipline with that and giving shorter answers. Time management, focus, and, yeah, I think those are the two areas. Just because they're really hard. They're really hard to keep control of. You know, I don't think you ever, like, master time management. You just – it's like they say, like addictions. If you have an addiction issue, you'll have it for your entire life. You'll always be at just different stages of manage. Same thing with injuries. If you blew out your knee will just go through different stages of manage. This week, it was great. I didn't have to think about it. Next week, well, you know, it was 80% okay. Then you have like a bad month, you know, and then you get it back on track. So I think they're like that.
So, yeah, that's that makes sense. I mean, self-discipline for those things is, I think, probably hard for most people. Another question for you. If you could be any person from history, who would it be?
If I could be anyone from history, that's a great question. You know, some of the people... That's a great question. I would want to be like Confucius, Lao Tzu. I would want to be... one of the more notable samurai.
You know, it's funny you say the word samurai because when I was like preparing for this, that just popped in my head. I was like, he's like a marketing ninja. And I was like, no, ninjas are kind of chintzy. He's more like a samurai, like disciplined and,
thanks,
you know.
Thanks, man.
Yeah, dude.
Appreciate that.
Yeah, I could see that.
Yeah, I mean, history, it's... I mean, you could say any of the greats. If there's any one story that I'd love to live, that's a really good question. But I mean, if I had to pick, it probably would be. I'd probably want to be. I love philosophy, so I'd want to be one of the great philosophers, Aristotle. I like Alan Watts and stuff. He's a brilliant man. I'm into knowledge and data. What? Speaking of.
I was just going to say, speaking of philosophy, I have kind of a goofy question a little bit, especially since you're Canadian. Who do you want to win the U.S. election?
Oh, to be honest, I don't even think it matters. If I'm really candid, I don't think it matters. I don't think it matters who wins. I think some things in the States are so deeply entrenched, like industrialized prison complex, where when slavery was abolished, all the slave handlers went into working in policing and the prison systems, and all the slaves started getting rounded up as prisoners. And that still exists today. So, I mean, the ratio of non-whites to minorities in the prisons is just, you can't even argue it. It's all minorities that are in there. And that's just so deeply ingrained, because then the corporations still get to get their, you know, the license plates made for 50 cents an hour, or whatever kind of work they have them doing. So I don't even know if it matters who wins the election in the States. I just think it's really odd that the two biggest gangs in the States have the same color as the two biggest political parties. And it's just weird to me that there's only two political parties. I mean, the country's, what, 450 million people? And you only have two? Like, we're Canada, we're 39 million people, and we have, like, 8, 12 political parties. Like, sure, there's like, two, three that, like, reign at top, but at least other people are allowed to stand up. And, like, we have a marijuana party. You know, they're never going to win. But it makes a point. It represents a group of people who are part of the society, and they at least have a voice, and they at least get to, you know. And then I just think it's strange that there's only, like, either yes or yes. Isn't that a thing they say in sales? Either yes or yes. So I don't even think it matters. I think sometimes they put people up that's a puppet show for what's really, because a lot of the deals are made behind closed doors. I mean, Arnold Schwarzenegger, I just know that Arnold Schwarzenegger, when he was, he ran some elections, and I remember that he wanted people to be able to vote on everything. And he had these different polls. And I just remember reading an article on it where he said he understood now that the public didn't want to be able to make decisions themselves. They wanted everything to be handled behind closed doors. That was an article I read where he was disappointed because, you know, he ran these polls on all these different issues, and he wanted the people to be able to choose, and, like, no one showed up to vote. And that was how it kind of closed the article. He's like, I realize now that the American public wants their politics handled not with them in the open public, but behind closed doors. And, like, that was, like, a statement.
No, you're good. I don't think it really matters either. There's actually a fantastic episode of South Park, basically, that if you guys are interested, you can go see. It's, I don't even know the name, but if you search for the choice between a turd sandwich and a giant douche, that's pretty much our election system.
Yeah.
That's every election. Like, yeah. Which do you want?
Well, and George Orwell wrote about this in 1984. And I mean, even with certain countries, like, I have an international team, and some of my staff have to use a proxy to be able to watch YouTube videos because information is being controlled on the way in and out. So government's a big thing, and they're so deeply ingrained. Like, you know, what Benjamin Franklin said, the only two guarantees in life are death and taxes. And that's because governments, you know, have built infrastructure. It's like a road. Like, it's so built up, you can't move that road easily. And there's systems in place, and we're all so obedient. And we're also, like, that's the other thing. You know, when you look at a lot of the people, like these terrorists and stuff, you notice they're all from really poor countries. That means that they don't have a lot of distractions from the fact that they're starving and dying. You know, but we're so, I don't know. I'm not sympathetic. I think those are atrocities on both sides being committed, and I would like a better world. I don't know if peace is realistic. I just don't think, being more of a Taoist, I think there's always going to be an ebb and flow between two polarities. That's just, you know, everything's a wave at some level. But I just think, we have a lot of distractions and not a lot of motivation and reason to really dig deep and fight and put our lives on the line for anything. So at this point with the States, I think it's mostly entertainment. I think it's mostly a puppet show. And I think really what's going to happen is the battles are going to go between different countries as they grow. And since the country is trying to take over and partner an alliance with themselves, I think that's really where the games are going to be played. I think most countries now are only controlled by a small handful of people, and then it's those people vying for power. And will we have a global country? I don't know. There'll always be little pockets and subsegments, but I don't know.
Yeah, it's having kids, it's kind of like not that promising, but what do? You hope for something better. What is the most difficult thing, would you say, that you've had to come back from?
Laying my life, eh? Well, a couple of things. One was refinding myself, I think, was a big one. You know, after you build a life with someone else for so many years, you lose your identity as an individual. And so that was something that I had to recoup from just mentally and emotionally, which I didn't think was going to be that big of a deal at any point in time until you're in it. So that was a big thing. I think the next biggest thing, honestly, was after I helped one client make, you know, a few million dollars. That was a bit of a thing. And the only reason was because for me, I'd never made that much money in my life before. And because of some office politics and debts the other people had, I didn't get full compensation as was planned. And there, it wasn't, a, if I'm, I feel like I'm such a fair and easy dude. Like if we had been able to sit down and just talk about things and be more like, I don't know, maybe you can't be that trusting, or maybe I'm too Canadian, but I just feel like if I had been involved alone, I would be like, oh, and there would have been some sort of compromise solution, but it wasn't like that at all. And so the way it left me feeling is it was weird. It was like having won a marathon and then no one applauding. So that, I don't know if that's like the quote unquote, the hardest thing to come back from. I think the first one was much, much, much more challenging. But the second one was a psychological thing that I had to get over because it was, I don't know, it was just a weird thing. It was different. It was just different that way to have a success and have it not be celebrated. But those are the kind of two. So I think a big part is making sure that you've got a really good day-to-day routine. Especially as entrepreneurs, we tend to like work isolated. So I think like, you know, I know you make a point of making time for your kids and your wife. And I think that's so important. I don't think there's anything business related that's more important than making sure that, I mean, there's an ebb and flow, right? You can't just commit all your life and time to them because you want to be able to provide, but you have to make time for them. And I think that's really important. I think you need to make time for health. I think you need to make time for your friends and family. And that has to be like every week, if not every day. And pursuing your dreams and goals. I mean, honestly, I think if you just people do the deep diving and self-exploration and try a bunch of different things and just live life wanting to serve others and help other people, it can be hard to go wrong. You know, you might feel however you feel good today, feel bad tomorrow, feel interested next day, but you can feel however you want to feel. It's about which direction you're moving in. I've had days where I felt terrible and I feel like I got nothing done. And I look at the end of the day, I'm like, man, this was the most productive day ever. And other days where I felt great. And I look at the end of the day, I'm like, I did nothing. So I feel like your emotions don't really matter. In that sense, like you're going to feel however you want to feel. You just got to keep your eye on the prize.
Gotcha. Who is the most interesting person you've met personally, and what did you learn from them?
Oh, there's a few people. So one was when I was in Japan, and I wish I could remember her name. She was a 93-year-old monk, female Buddhist monk. And she was the most interesting person for me because when she was a kid growing up, she had a family of five. She was one of the middle children. I think she was the second youngest of this family of five. And she said all of her other brothers and sisters died. And she was so afraid that she was going to be next. She ran away. She like hitchhiked. She like hopped on a train, whatever. She went towns and towns and hours away from her home. And she ended up on the porch of some temple. And she joined the monk, I want to say the monastery, but it's not it. But she joined the temple and became a monk. And female monks are so rare on their own. And then for her to be 93, and she just wanted to live. And so every day has been a blessing since I was a kid, because she didn't know, they never knew why her brothers and sisters passed away like they did. She didn't know what it was. So for her, it was just really interesting to see that, especially at the time I was in my life, because I was living in Japan and really into the Zen. So there's Zen, there's Shinto, and there's Christianity, but there's also Taoism and other religions. So I was just really in the mix of a lot of Eastern religions at the time. And it was just really fascinating to spend time with her. There's another guy, Jim. I don't know his last name either. He was dating my buddy's mom, and this was in BC. And he had lived such an amazing life. And he had this great philosophy. He would buy books, read them, and then give them away. He had a rule that after he read a book, he had to give it away within the next 30 days. And I got a lot of books for him. He was interesting. He was an old man with a lot of great stories. I'm trying to think of some other great, strange people that I've met. I've met personally. I mean, I've been fortunate to have met a lot of different people. I mean, I could even talk about when I was in Africa. I mean, I met all sorts of interesting people when I was there. I met, I got to meet some child soldiers who had come down from northern Uganda that had been taken from their families. The one brother said he was forced to kill his younger sister in front of his parents, and then the soldiers killed his parents, and then they were taken in and indoctrinated with extreme violence to be a soldier and to just commit out the same heinous crimes that were committed to them on other families as a way of survival. And women were taken in. And anyways, that was just really interesting and fascinating because you wouldn't know it just looking at them. You know, they just seemed like a couple of normal kids. They didn't seem to have any attitudes. These kids, they'd escaped. They got some NGO got involved and they got free and they escaped. And I don't know how long it'd been. Maybe a year, 2 years. I met them when I went whitewater rafting on the Nile River in Uganda, and I was there for 5 weeks in Uganda, 4 weeks in Kenya. I mean, I hung out in Kenya. I hung out in the slums of Kenya for 4 weeks. That was cool, too, because here I am in Kibera, which used to be the biggest slum in the world. It was the second largest slum when I was there. The Kenya riots had just happened, and just hanging out and watching these people, you know, and just seeing how they live and living with them. It was with my ex's family. So she had family all over. Some were in government, some were all over and every tier of society. And in the slum, it's on like a hill. And the further up the hill you go, I'm making air quotes here, the richer the people are. And I mean, the rich people in the slum are still in the slum. So it's about as rich as they are. But they at least have a roof over their head and barbed wire around and cement walls around where they live. And sometimes electricity and indoor plumbing. I think that kind of worked. We had a toilet, but you had to use a jerry can. There wasn't indoor plumbing. That was right. We had a toilet, but you had to pour water into the toilet to make it work. But then at the worst part, we were in the mud floors in the deepest part of Kibera, which were by the two mosques. Because there was two mosques. I went to the wrong wedding. We were there. I'm on a total side tangent, but just interesting people from all walks of life. That's a great question, but I think I've been really fortunate. I mean, I've hitchhiked across Canada 6 times, and I got to speak with truck drivers. I remember I got picked up by a mom once when I was hitchhiking. She had 3 kids in the back and 1 in the front with her. And when she stopped, I didn't know where to sit. She's like, "You're in the back." And I was like, "This is kind of weird, putting a strange man with the kids in the back." But then she's like, I could tell she's turned up the radio. She just needed me to entertain the kids. Like, I was like clown and like, "Hey, guys," like, you know, like for like the next couple hours. That was it. And I found out she was a cop later, and like that was kind of interesting for me because she picked up. I just met a lot of different people. I've been fortunate to travel and live. And I mean, I was in Australia. Yeah,
hey, you've got some diverse experiences there. Geez.
I'm very lucky that way. I mean, I also did this thing, Katimovic, where I got to travel Canada for 9 months, lived 3 months in BC, 3 months in Alberta, 3 months in Quebec. I lived with the Indian Native Americans in BC. I worked with the Similkameen Indian Band Office, which was one of the more well-off ones. You know, we got to build sweat lodges. I got to learn about their cultures. We went to an actual powwow, which was kind of cool. This is when cameras, we had the old disposable ones. You take a picture, you have to like turn it and then take another picture. And you're not supposed to take pictures of powwows because they're a sacred ritual. But I took some anyways because I was just, I was 17. I was like, you know, this is amazing. None of the pictures turned out. They all turned out blurry. I thought that was kind of funny. It's like 12 of them. I was like, ooh. But yeah, I've been fortunate. But that was also partially because I was an orphan. I had no home. You know, I had my adopted parents, and they've always been, I mean, they've lived in the same house forever, ever since they had. We moved to Kingston, Ontario, October 1st, 1990. My mom went into labor. My adopted mom went into labor. My mom went into labor on the 2nd, gave birth to my brother on the 4th. And ever since then, they've never left. But before that, we used to travel and do all sorts of stuff. But after that, like, they still travel, but like, they never moved. Like they were just there. But now, I'm 32 now, I've learned a lot about what it means to be adopted an orphan. And they say, like, adopted kids sometimes have times connecting with the host family. And it's true. I mean, I'm 32 years old, and I love my family, and they've been there for me. But it's like I can't tell the difference between them and my closest friends, like, emotionally. You know, I know it's my mom, and I know, and I'm saying that I'm just being really candid, and I know I'm supposed to, and all, but it's really like she's just been there as much, you know, but I've got great friends that have really been there for me too. And she's on a higher level. She is on a higher level, but I don't know. I don't know if it's as deep as some people talk about, like their mom. Like you just see, wow, this is getting deep into Daryl's head. But you just see like a bond between people. Perfect example, my girlfriend, she's moved up to be with me and she's away from her family. Furthest away she's ever been. And we were driving one day, she had a call from mom. And I don't think she saw, but I got choked up just listening to her talk to her mom because I could tell how much they missed each other. And that, and like, I've never known that. I've never known that bond. Like, I've never had that. Like, yeah, I've got my mom, but it's never emotionally been that, you know? So it's the whole, I love this quote, comes from a Kanye West song. Respect to him. I'm ashamed it's not like Socrates or something, but he's got a song and I love the quote, "Everything I'm not made me everything I am." So because I have no roots, it allowed me to travel the world. It allowed me to live on the West Coast away from my family for 4 years, live in Japan for 3 years, you know, hitchhike across, just, you know, live all over, go all over the States, you know, but it's the trade-off. So, you know, speak 3 languages, have backpacked on almost every continent on the planet, you know, all that sort of stuff. But it's because I didn't have any roots. So it was like Dr. Seuss, like, "Are you my mother?" If you know that book, like just trying to figure out who I am.
Yeah.
So, but I love my life. I'm very grateful.
No, that's cool. I like that quote. It's it's funny. It comes from Kanye, but every now and then there are lyrics and rap songs that that's I right. just like.
Yeah. Well, there's great rappers amazing. For sure. Yeah. So.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I try to tell my wife, it's like, you know, it's if you take out some of it, you know, the rest of it is pretty amazing because she won't appreciate some of the lyrics if a few of them she doesn't agree with, kind of thing.
I think it's art, yeah. Like Tupac. I don't know. Like, sit someone down, have them listen to anything from Tupac, and how do you not appreciate that? I grew up on Tupac. I love Tupac. If I could only listen to one artist, it would be Tupac, just because the depth of his lyrics. I wrote poetry when I was a kid. You know, I did a lot of journaling and writing poetry as a way to, you know, just keep myself sane. And I love Tupac. I mean, the depth of his lyrics, the social issues he talks about, his own personal, how candid he is. Then he puts it in music and, you know, I mean, his earlier stuff was okay, but like All Eyes on Me, like there's like so much good classical music in the back of that, classical instruments, just good beats. I just love it.
Yeah, there are some ridiculously talented people out there. And I mean, in all types of music, you've got like the talented people and those who aren't, who give it a bad name.
Yeah.
So let me ask you a question. If you couldn't do what you're doing now, if you couldn't help businesses even, let's say, what would you go do if it wasn't B2B?
I've been thinking about that. I would probably right now, I'd probably go open up a CrossFit gym, a CrossFit box, because it's a good model. It's a membership model. I like businesses that have subscription revenue and recurring because it's easier on the owner. You're not terrified about where your sales is going to come from next month. You know, and even if people, maybe the training comes in ebbs and flows and more people train this time, as you know, you generally don't lose as many members. People will pay even if there's months they're not coming because they plan to come back. So that can be a good model that way. But the community is really positive. There's a lot of team. There's a lot of like, I almost want to go to do their training stuff. They've got like a couple seminars, I think it's like a 1 day or 2 day seminars they do to like certify people. And I want to see what's in that because I'm always interested in the group dynamics. They always have really good team activities. They're really big on team building. And there's a lot of things that I notice. I've trained at a few different gyms that they all do in unison. And I think help teach people good team building skills. So it's just a really positive movement. It's focused on safe, effective exercises that get people the best results. I'm getting great results from it. You know, I mean, I had the martial arts school, all that, but right now, if I couldn't do that, I would want to do that because I would be building a community of positive people who help and support each other. And even if they're not that outside of the CrossFit gym, that's who they are when they're there. Cause that's the kind of community that all the gyms I've seen have fostered. And it's, you know, I'm really concerned about my health. Cause I mentioned I'm adopted. I don't actually know what common for my, like, my bloodline. Like, do we all lose our hair when we turn 40? Do, you know, like, my landlord, when I was in San Diego, this four generations before him, all the males lived to be 76. He's 64. So he's doing all of his bucket list stuff because he's like, the oldest any of us have lived is 76. He's doing all these things to try to beat that. But I'm like, I don't know what my wild card could be. So for me, health is really important because I feel like I got to be aware of everything. I don't know what I can do. I don't have the luxury of knowing that all the men in my life have smoked and drank profusely and lived to be 112. So I just don't know. I don't know what luxuries I have and don't have.
You could just act as if your dad was like Mick Jagger and you're going to live forever no matter what you do.
Yeah, I know, right? That guy is like a walking pharmacy, like literally. Like, just just wring out his skin and something will come out. Like, he's just, that's so funny.
So if you had a 30-second Super Bowl spot, what would you do with it?
Give away something really powerful, really meaningful. I would probably, in front of that many people, want to do whatever I thought I could do to help the most people the most. I would want to give people something that would help them more than anything else. If I would want to be known by that many people, I would want to be known for trying to help them and do whatever I can do the best to help them. It's a common thing you hear from people. They don't want to give away all their secrets and all that stuff. But when a band gets the chance to put one song on national radio, they don't put their second best song. They put their absolute best song they've ever written on there because they want people to hear it, to love it, to vibe with it, and then go looking for their other stuff. If I had 30 seconds on the Super Bowl, I don't know what that would be right now, but I would find something really impactful and meaningful to try to help people with. Just, you know, and I wouldn't make a cute commercial. It would be like, do you want this? If you want this, guaranteed. Or if you want this, you can't say guaranteed, maybe. So some sort of credibility builder in there just to try and build people's confidence and just get it here. And then, you know, just help people as much as I could. If you help enough people, that's Zig Ziglar. You can have anything you want if you help enough other people get what they want. And I think that's really true. I think that's really true.
Love it. So, related question. If you could have a billboard, let's say, like in the busiest, most trafficked part of Toronto, for your business, being an internet marketer, what would you put on a billboard?
I would have a CTA. Again, I would still give something away for free. Because if someone's driving by, so if I was trying to be an internet marketing coach and I had a billboard in Toronto, I would follow like one of the most old school methods ever. I would be like, you know, the seven myths of internet marketing, get your free report here, you know, or I would offer some sort of free course, free mini course. And have some sort of CTA that gets people to text. It'd probably get them to text in. Text your name and email to blank. Because then you got your phone, their phone number, their name, and email. I would have some sort of freebie offer. So for those people listening, there's two types of marketing. Well, there's more. But some people just call it direct sale. And other times it's two-step. And two-step means you get their contact info first. And then you build a relationship with them and go for the second one. I'm very much into relationship building. Although I do like to make money when I spend it. I do like to get things cheap and free, but I would want to build an audience and a community. So I'd want to give away something for free and get them to text in. Yeah.
Gotcha. That's smart. I think anybody listening, that's what I was hoping you would give as like a specific thing. And that was really specific. Something, you know, the myths and having text, all that's perfect. What conventional wisdom, business or otherwise, do you think is false?
Ignorance is bliss. I think that's false. I think ignorance is pain and suffering and anguish. And I mean, watch any movie. There's so many movies you can watch. You'd be like, if that main character just opened their mouth right now and said what they knew to that other person, the movie would be over right now. And it's because they were ignorant to it. They didn't say it. So ignorance is not bliss. That's a big one. I think conventional wisdom too. I'm just going to say this. I really think that there needs to be more emphasis put on day-to-day and week-to-week living and having that just be like, I have no problem getting up and starting work in the morning. I have no problem at all. In fact, my body wakes up and I want to work. because what I'm doing I feel is passionate and meaningful. And I might not get up singing, but I do think I'm helping make the world a better place. I think I'm helping other people, and I don't always do it for profit, but I think in one way or another it's going to, you know, it's going to come back to me in some way. And even if it doesn't, I don't need it to, because I feel like I make enough of a difference in the world that I don't have to worry. And the reason why I say that, and this is wise conventional wisdom, is everyone's trying to climb this ladder, trying to make more money, everyone, like all this stuff. Everyone wants this, like, it's just really about enjoying your day-to-day life. I've helped people make millions of dollars. I've rubbed elbows with miserable rich people. I've rubbed elbows with really happy rich people. I've rubbed elbows with miserable poor people. I've rubbed elbows with really happy poor people. The difference is whether people enjoy what they're doing and how they're living their day-to-day, month-to-month life, or week-to-week, month-to-month life. And I think that's super important. I think people need to make a checklist of all their favorite things and try to do them all as much as possible. And, you know, work can't always be fun. And not everyone can be at the top of the food chain and an ecosystem. So not all animals can be the apex predator. You know, so we're going to have people that they drive bus. We're going to have people that, you know, clean carpets. We're going to have people that, you know, that have to do customer service, and that's not their meaning in life. But if you have a choice in the matter, I really think there needs to be an emphasis on doing things that are more fulfilling, because a lot of those other tasks are being automated. Smart entrepreneurs, smart people are finding ways to pull out the drudgery from our lives and automate it with software and machinery and technology. So I think there's more of a call than ever to make sure that you're living a life where you're doing something that is meaningful to you, even if it's, you know, like a great example is, I know a lady that it's just a fulfillment house for information products. They just ship them, mail them out. But she really loves what she does. She really does. She loves operations. She loves making sure things are streamlined. She likes, like, organize. Like, I would think she would be a watchmaker in another life, because she just enjoys that. She just enjoys making sure everything lines up and is super efficient and this happens there. So even though it's just printing DVDs and CDs and workbooks and that, she really enjoys making that place run. And every day to her, it's like, how can I make this run better? And it's like a never ending challenge, you know, and then fires happen, all that. And I mean, it's just the day to day life. The meaning of life is just to live. That's it. As soon as you're born, you know, you're going to die. So just enjoy it. And I think there is good and bad. It's just inherently there for whatever reason. And we all know it and we all feel it. And, you know, I don't think we need any big leader in the sky. I just think you just have to enjoy your life and think about tomorrow. And, you know, I don't know if I'm going on too much tangent, but I just really think there needs to be a focus on day-to-day, week-to-week living as being like, I'm not going to waste 12 hours today watching TV, because that's not, like, you know, when I look at my list of all my 12 favorite things, I need to do them today as if I was going to die tomorrow. You know, when they say, like, live like tomorrow, you know, live today like it was your last day alive, I think that's legitimate. And that's just like, I like to do this every day, you know, or every week, and then try to live to that. And of course, you plan for tomorrow and you have it built. I don't know. I'm not trying to encourage people to spend all their money and, you know, say, tell their bosses to F off. But I just really think that there's not a lot of people that are living in a sustainable way. That makes sense. I think I went on three different tangents there.
Yeah, no, I love it, actually. Good instruction for life. And yeah, ignorance is definitely not bliss. Ignorance leads to pain.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Let's say you had a time machine. What would you tell 5-year-old Daryl if you could go back and talk to yourself when you were 5?
Oh, I go back to Daryl. I like that one. Well, 5 years old, how smart am I?
how smart is 5-year-old Daryl?
Yeah, no, I know. Well, 5-year-old Daryl, I would honestly just say, follow your heart's passions. Just trust your instincts. Just trust your instincts. They're not always going to be right, but how do you know what's wrong? Like, that's the thing. That's, again, why I say, like, the purpose of life is living, because there's no way any of us can imagine. Right now, I love this quote. It's from Alan Watts. Your life exists in the place you call here and now, which is your here and now. Micah and I have a different here and now than you have as a here and now. And your life to the universe is like a wave is to the ocean, a single wave. I mean, the ocean encompasses this entire planet, and there are so many waves going on at any time, and those waves are affected by the moon, they're affected by the boats that are going through. There's so much stuff that the waves can't control or really predict. And so it's the same thing with us in decision-making. Like, I have no idea whether some guy in another country is going to decide to blow himself up on my in my neighborhood, or whether, right, or whether anything, whether there's a gas pipe that's going to leak, or whether the sky is going to decide to make it snow today, which will affect my life and the decisions I make. So we like to think that we're just isolated beings that just follow like a linear path, and that's not true at all. We're constantly pushed around left, right, back, forth, up, down, because of weather, because of other people, because of institutions that make decisions and surprises. So you just kind of have to go forward. So if I could find 5-year-old Daryl, I would just say, trust your instincts. There's more that goes into your intuition than you can consciously fathom. Your brain pulls from so many other sources, and you won't always be right. But you also won't know if being wrong was the right answer at that time. You know, if you ever do a Choose Your Own Adventure book, sometimes doing something that is a negative right and immediately actually turns out to be the biggest positive at the end of it. So, again, which comes back to the day-to-day, week-to-week. So I would just tell myself to just do what you love, chase your heart, your passions. Don't let anyone ever tell you you can't do it. Trust your instincts and just enjoy the ride, you know, just enjoy the ride and just watch out for things coming from the past to haunt you, in a sense of don't do stupid things, you know, do unto others as you would do unto yourself type thing.
Okay. You know, I think that's probably a perfect way to end this whole thing. That's like great advice for anybody, you know. I wish my little 5-year-old self could have heard the same thing.
Thanks, man. What was 5-year-old Micah like?
I think I was really excited about everything and like couldn't wait to be an adult. Now I wish I was 5.
Now you wish I was 5, right? Yeah. That's right. Eh? Grass is always greener. So no, but it's good. Yeah, Micah, this is cool. We have any other questions?
You know, there's one or two others. Maybe one I do want to ask you still. I just thought what you had just said was so profound, but I will ask you one more. What business owner do you most respect and why?
Elon Musk. Hands down, Elon Musk. Because he has revolutionized so many industries. He is... The guy put his fortune on the table twice, maybe even 3 times, but definitely twice. He put his billions and hundreds of millions of dollars on the table and just like let it ride. Like, look, I'm doing this because it's the greater good for humanity that we figure out a way to get off this planet. Because if we don't figure out a way to get off this planet, we're just going to hang out here and wait for some eventual extinction event, which is going to happen. It's not even like if it will happen. It's just how many years is it? 1 year, 10, right? So that's going to happen. So I respect him so much because, you know, he built a little rinky-dink business, sold it for a few million. From my understanding, it was like an early version of Google Maps, which is kind of cool, you know. And then he's got PayPal, and then he's like leveling up. He's like, let's just keep changing things. And I just love it because he just has a knack. I mean, IBM scored him when he was really young as one of the highest they'd ever score for proficiency in coding. And he pursued that, you know, and he just followed his passions. He actually came and went to university in Kingston, Queens University. I grew up here. He was only here a couple of years, but he did his freshman year here a couple of years before he went to the States. But I respect him so much because, like, you listen to his advice, he's like, work your ass off. Work every waking moment. You should be working every waking moment and towards something that's meaningful. And if it's just the right thing to do, then you should just do it because it's the right thing to do. And I just love that because I feel like he just has come with that sort of mentality and a really keen intellect, and he just does things he's passionate about. And the money is a byproduct. And the proof of that is the fact that he put his fortune on the line. Like, he would have been – I don't even think there's anyone on this call that – I would like to think I would, but I don't know if you really could. Like, could you overcome the naysayers and your family and all the people like, what are you doing? Like, you are rich for generations of your family. You're going to gamble it all twice on a company. You know, like that's, I respect him so much for that because of what he's done. Because like Steve Jobs, you know, he revolutionized so many different industries, but he's done it over and over and over again, following his passions, doing what he loves, trying to make things better for people, keeping the end user in mind, disregarding social norms and the infrastructure of how it's supposed to be, building it from the ground up if he has to, betting everything when it really matters because it's the right thing to do. I think that's just so commendable. I really appreciate it. So.
Yeah, that is awesome. Everything I've seen and heard and read on the guy and the people he hangs out with is just like, geez, that is a totally different level. You know, it's not even about succeeding or doing well or doing the best. It's just like, you know, out of left field, like totally new, interesting, different, cool.
Yeah. Now, I want to put a caveat in that because I don't, again, we say like when someone's your mentor in one thing, let them be your mentor in one thing and not everything. I think this is a good example because there is a great book called, where is it? I probably have it around here. Market Leaders, something about market leaders. I mentioned it before. Max Carey, we did an interview with him and he was a huge proponent of this book, and this guy has an index on the NASDAQ. He helped Outback Steakhouse grow from 2 restaurants to over 3,500. You know, he's done over $1 billion in sales in his career. Highly recommended this book, and it was about different market leaders, and that every business that's ever been successful and had sustained success was a master in one of three disciplines. Either they had the best product available on the market and it was untouchable, or they had the best operations in the industry and they were untouchable, or they had the best marketing in the industry and therefore they were untouchable. And the marketing was about providing really personalized interactions with people and like a, almost like a custom done for you, like this is for me feeling. You know, creating an affinity like Apple did, things like that. Operations is like Walmart, where they are, their operations are so disciplined of market leaders, I think is what it was called. I'm going to look it up. But operations were so well done that they could charge, their margins could be so minimal and they could sell products for so cheap, no one can compete with them. And then products where the product is so superior that no one can touch it. And the reason why I'm bringing this up is because Elon Musk actually in an interview said that he's never spent a dollar on marketing in his businesses, that he feels that everything should be put towards making the product a better product. And if it doesn't do that, you should totally disregard it. You know, like it just has no purpose. I think that's true to a degree. I love the concept. I love the passion. I love the idea. I don't think it applies to all industries. I really don't. I don't think you can necessarily do that if you're a handyman in your city, to build a house is still, I mean, maybe you can find a better way to 3D print houses, but I just think at some point, like some people do need to advertise. And so, you know, for him, it's worked really well because he's been able to build things from the ground up and restructure them. And I think that that does apply. And I love that. But I just want to bring this up as an example that even someone that I think is so great as that, I'm like, well, he's really good at building the world's best products. And if you're in an industry and you're going to redefine that industry from the ground up, then I think that's exactly what you need to do. Is make that product better. But he does a ton of press releases. So I kind of disagree when I'm like, you know, there's only three ways to get traffic. You buy it, you borrow it, or you build it. And he's been borrowing traffic from day one, which is still buying it to a certain extent. And so traffic, for those listening, is like eyeballs or an audience. And so he might not have spent money on advertising, but it's because all the things he's done have been so noteworthy, he's just gone PR the whole way. And, and built a following out of having the best product. So I just wanted to put that caveat there that you really just, people listen to me, take things I say with a grain of salt. Because we're all just figuring it out. That's the other thing. If like, you know, if you're 25 years old right now, you know as much or more than any other 25-year-old in your life has ever lived. Mike and I are both in our 30s and we know as much or more, possibly more than any other 30-year-old has that's lived. I've been reading since I was 2, so I've read a ton of stuff. I read on a regular basis, and no one else has had that much access to this much information. We're all the newest version, like all of our kids are the newest versions of blank-year-olds, you know, and so we're always at the cutting edge of that, and we build on the best practices of people behind us, but at the end of the day, we're still kind of fumbling around in the dark, trying to figure it out, and hoping we don't become extinct before we find some great answer. So That's all.
That's a great caveat. I mean, to that point, it made me think about how many people I know who, contrary to what Elon Musk is saying, who are excellent, amazing, brilliant at what they do, and they're under-marketed and just struggling. I think that case far outweighs the case of the person who made something so great, you know, people beat a path to their door to get it.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, and that's what I say. If your only tool is a hammer, then every problem looks like a nail. And you have to recognize that, you know, and when people have something that works really well, like I learned this in martial arts because this is something, and I know we're kind of over time, but I'm okay. And hopefully I'm not disrespecting your time, but excuse me. I think this is important because when we had martial arts, first of all, so I did Gracie Jiu-Jitsu. So you learn the fundamental curriculum, you know, the things that do don't work. And then all these guys are coming out with these fancy new techniques and this guy wins a tournament with it. And that guy went, and wow, everyone's learning the new fancy thing. But the fundamentals are really fundamental because these fancy advanced things don't work without the fundamentals in place. And then we start to realize that these fancy advanced things actually only work on people to a certain experience level. Because once you get above that experience level, the higher level guys, they're not going to fall for that nonsense. You know. And then the other thing you figure out is that even at the highest level, people, even though we've like, all right, even though we know, okay, these are the fundamentals, these are the things that always work, that's why they're fundamental, and we take the world's best at them, everyone's going to have a different flavor and a spin on how they're used to adapt to their personal circumstances, their body type, their strengths, some guy, you know, their genes. So that's even where I feel like, in some ways, I get like Elon Musk, obviously, if he were taking put in martial arts arena, he's like world-class fighter. He's like creating records, right? Record-breaking, as many medals as he's won, but his game works for him. It might not work for someone who's taller, who's fatter, who's, right, who's got not as much upper body strength. So, and that's again where we go talk to people and learn from them if they're experts in what they're experts in. And I think, which is something I didn't mention, but you probably want to find people who look as much like you as possible for like your circumstances and what you're trying to get, because then it will work for you. If you're a coding guy and you think like Elon does and you want to go and revolutionize industries, then you need to do exactly what he's saying. Because what he's saying will get you there. But that's all. Just that there's not one answer. That's all. I don't want to go on a super long tangent. But just that. Just to put that caveat in there. You know, people sometimes put me on a pedestal. And you know how that happens, Micah, when you've got a large audience. You know, I'm really good at some things. I'm not so good at others. I'm really smart in certain areas. I hang around those areas, as Warren Buffett used to say. You know, but even then, there's always different circumstances. So.
Yeah, you know, one guy you turned me on to, Ty Lopez, one of the things that I got from him that I've been applying lately that goes right in line with what you're saying is he just talks about knowing yourself a little bit more and how most people don't even understand their own strengths and whatnot, and so they wouldn't know who to follow or what to do, that, you know, just because it worked for this guy, you might be totally different. And so doing a strengths finder assessment or a personality profile thing, using that for a little while now. I mean, it's only been about 30 days, but that's been a really interesting thing just to be able to see things that are working amazingly for somebody or for a company and be like, that's not me, and be okay with it, you know, not because it's a bad thing, but it's not my thing, versus in the past is like, oh, I got to make that work. And if I can't make that work, there's something wrong, you know?
Correct. Yeah, I agree 180%. So, yeah, and that's, again, it comes back when you asked about the myths and the lies, you know. It's that some of the gurus aren't necessarily gurus, some of them are gurus, but you may, you know, you just got to be careful. You got to pick people that are as close to your situation. I was a big guy, so martial arts, I always wanted to learn the small guy's game. I wanted to be a big guy who knew how to fight like a small guy, because I thought that would give me an upper advantage, because I already knew the big guy's game, and it was just bleh, like overpower them and lay flat on them. Like, that's the big guy's game. So you just have to, yeah, you have to know yourself. I mean, this is all classic wisdom, right? The man who knows his enemy is strong, and the man who knows himself is unbeatable, you know, and I think that's a huge part of it. So again, I think it just comes down to just living a good life. At the end of the day, we're all going to die. You just want to give your offspring the better chance of going, you know, one leg up. But you don't want to sacrifice today, hoping that there'll be that tomorrow when there may or may not be. And, you know, nobody wants to live a miserable life. And So that's it. So just follow what you do, love to do, and go out there and do it. And for those people that are listening, I value and appreciate your time and attention. The fact that you've even listened to me ranting for the last hour, I'm always surprised, and I always appreciate it. And I really do. That's why my tagline is "Your success is my success." Because at this point, I'm like, you know, every step I make in my career and all the income I make, I really want it to be and being valuable to others, because then I'll never have to worry about being hungry. If I can constantly have my success depend on other people's success, then, you know, I'll always come to it with the right mindset. I'll always come to it with pure intent. And as long as I can help them be successful, I'll be all right. And, you know, it just keeps me from being lazy and procrastinating and all that good stuff. So it keeps me in check. And so thank you for listening. Micah, unless there's any other questions, was there anything else?
No, I think that does it.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's cool. And it's just an honor and a pleasure. And it's been a wild ride. I mean, this podcast was started as a side. It really was. I had no goal. It was, I'm going to launch this podcast and become some business guru. And yet, like, I had no, I was like, oh, my buddy said he'd be doing multi-million dollar campaigns. I should record some of these conversations I have and do the podcast. And so I built it knowing I'd want to have an audience someday. But even now, you know, we're still just pumping these out for free and not asking anything in return, really. A lot of people are doing podcasting as a way to try to grow their business. I don't even think I've gotten, I've had all sorts of people reach out and be like, Daryl, what exactly is it that you do? But we'll be updating these podcasts with ways for people to connect and get involved sometime this year. But up until now, it's just been putting it out there. 80,000 downloads, not a single penny in paid advertising. No one, I've not asked anyone. I asked one guy to mail when we first launched our first three episodes. That was it. Small list, wasn't a big list. And that's like the only non-organic promotion that's gone on. So everyone that's listening, thank you. I value and I appreciate you. Micah, thank you. Of course, you've been here for years and years talking about quality leaders. I mean, Mike has been there. He was a mentor. He was a friend. He was actually the guy that had the courage to stand up to me. I'm 6'4", a martial artist at the time, and told me I was a penis face because I was doing something wrong. And I don't think that's something other people would have done. So you're really good with giving good, candid, clear advice and just great ideas. Like even doing this, this was cool. And I hope the listeners enjoy it. And I just appreciate your time, man.
Yeah, man. It was good to get to know you a little bit better. So thank you.
You've reached the end of our interview. Now, first, let me thank you for listening. I appreciate and respect you more than you'll ever know. And now I'd like to ask you a couple of questions. First, what three lessons did you just learn? What three aha moments just jumped out at you? Second, what can you implement for yourself and your business in the next 24 hours? Third, what can you give to someone else to help you with, or give them to just do it for you? Whatever it is, remember, taking action is the secret sauce to results. Now, if you think this interview would be helpful for a friend, please give them a link to it. It'll help them and it'll help me too. I'd also like to invite you to help me find out more about the challenges you're facing, your dreams, your goals, and how I can help you overcome what's holding you back. We both do better when we know better. And your success is my success. So please reach out and interact. You can visit our website, bestbusinesscoach.ca for Canada or California, where I'm from and where I'm living. You're welcome to also try out one of our paid programs. You can find us on YouTube, Facebook, and pretty much every other social media channel you can think of. You should also subscribe to the podcast. And if you're enjoying them, please leave us a nice review. It really helps. That's all for now. Once again, thank you. Take care of yourself, and remember, the world needs the best business you can build. And I believe in you.